deacons, stir up the dust. Deacon is really nothing more than a Greek word that we've made into an English word. And the original word, diakonos, comes from two other words that together suggest a dust, raising a dust by hastening. Why do they stir up the dust? Because they are not idle. They are busy doing the Lord's work and the church's work. They are moving about. That stirs up the dust. You know how sometimes the light will come in through your window and maybe the sun is down low so it just comes in kind of angle like this and you can see the dust floating in the air? And then you move and it makes even more dust. But one who's not a servant, who's idle, not busy working, just sees the dust kind of floating there. But the servant, deacon, stirs up that dust. He really gets it moving. Deacons also uncover roofs. I want to show you a story that does not use the name deacon in it, but shows deacon-like men doing whatever is necessary to serve a friend. That is what deacons are. Servants to their brethren, their friends. What is so interesting about this story in Mark chapter 2, and you may want to turn to that now, is that we are so consumed with our facilities, especially the roof. We sacrifice, if we have to, we'll sacrifice works of evangelism, edification, and spirituality to maintain a roof, as though Jesus died to set up the church to save roofs rather than saving people. If servants have to choose between roofs and people, they sacrifice roofs, knowing that the Lord will take care of the roof by giving us people who will take care of it for us when we put His works first. You seek first God's kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things, these material things of life, they'll supply for us. Today, as Brother George Calvert has already announced, we are appointing two more deacons. So I want to give some thoughts on servants, what deacon servants are. Four men. Let's take a look at four men who uncovered a roof for their friend. Look at Mark chapter 2, starting in verse 1. And again he entered Capernaum after some days, and it was heard that he was in the house. Immediately many gathered together so that there was no longer room to receive them, not even near the door. And he preached the word to them. Then they came to him, bringing a paralytic who was carried by four men. Okay, you just heard Lake read those three verses, and I just wanted to read them again, that you might see this home where Jesus is, so crowded with people, there's no room around the door. Four men are carrying a friend or a family member, someone dear to them, on what we might call a stretcher. What do you do? Verses 4 and 5. And when they could not come near him because of the crowd, they uncovered the roof where he was. So when they had broken through, they let down the bed on which the paralytic was lying. When Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, "Son, your sins are forgiven you." A man was completely immobile, dependent upon others for everything. Have you ever imagined what it would be like to be paralyzed? And I would guess that if you haven't, one of the reasons might be because it's too frightening, isn't it? I'd much rather have a kidney transplant and all the problems I've had with that than to be paralyzed. There's a lot of other problems I'd like to have rather than being paralyzed. Would you not agree? Just, you know, whether it's from the waist down or from the neck down. Oh, man. What an awful life. Have you taken care of someone who's paralyzed? The time and the work that's involved, the devotion, is phenomenal. Whether you are the cared for or the caregiver, you would do anything to be free of this invisible straitjacket. And then you find that there is a cure. And there is only one cure. It is not in the form of surgery. It is not a pill. It is not physical therapy or anything that you can keep duplicating. It is in the form of one man. And yet, the crowds are so thick around him that it allows no movement. You cannot get to him, and they won't let you get to him. But you want your friend cured. So your mind starts working. How are we going to get to him? We don't know how long this is going to last. He may speak here for 4 hours. So you start thinking creatively, and you notice something about the roof. That it can be broken apart, and yet the surrounding structure can still be strong enough to support 4 men plus the weight of the fifth one, as you lower him down right over where this healer is. Would you do that for a friend? Would you do that for a family member? Would you want them to do that for you if you were that person? I am persuaded that you would. That is the spirit of a servant. He does whatever is necessary to get the job done as soon as possible. That is the spirit of a deacon. Servants or deacons serve people's needs. Whether it is uncovering a roof or putting on a new covering for a roof. So if they have to sacrifice something to put one on, they'll do it. If they have to sacrifice the roof to do something else, they'll do it. Because they do not serve material things, but they use material things to serve people. Let us consider what kind of men would uncover someone's roof to get to Jesus. Number one, concern for others. Here are 4 people who are not obviously thinking about themselves, but they're concerned for others. Number 2, the spirit of cooperation. You know, 3 of them could have had, you know, the strength, the time, everything you want. But then what if the 4th one decided, well, you know something? I've done enough. I'm going home. Suddenly, the job gets a lot harder, if not impossible. There has to be a spirit of cooperation. Thirdly, in this case, the belief that Jesus is the only answer. There was nowhere else to go. America, with all of our wonderful things, hadn't been invented yet. In fact, we still can't heal someone who's paralyzed like this. And number four, people who have their priorities in order. You know, if they've been thinking about themselves first, or if they had other things to do, we can just go on with the list. I don't think they would have been bothering with using up their time, their energy, their resources, and potentially damaging someone else's roof to help a friend. They had their priorities in order. People first. Now, here is something that the Bible doesn't cover next, but I do want to read verses 6 through 12 to think about this. Who fixed the roof? You know, somebody had to fix the roof, put it back together. Either to keep out the bugs, or to keep out the burning sun, or the rain. It does rain over there once in a while. Sometimes it even snows over there. You have to have a roof over your head. So who fixed it? Let's read 6 to 12. And some of the scribes were sitting there and reasoning in their hearts. Why does this man speak blasphemies like this? Who can forgive sins but God alone? But immediately when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they reasoned thus within themselves, he said to them, why do you reason about these things in your hearts? Which is easier, to say to the paralytic, your sins are forgiven you, or to say, arise, take up your bed and walk? Well, it's easier to say, your sins are forgiven you. I mean, I can say that to you, your sins are forgiven you. But how do you know that I've just forgiven you of your sins? How do you know that I have the authority to forgive you of your sins? Now, the sins you've committed against me, I can forgive those. But what about the sins you've committed against others or against God? Do I have authority to forgive those sins? Well, Jesus did. So he wanted to demonstrate that he did. Verse 10. But that you may know that the Son of Man has power on earth to forgive sins, he said to the paralytic, I say to you, arise, take up your bed, and go to your house. And suddenly, the man's not paralyzed anymore. He can walk. He has the physical strength, the agility, coordination, and almost like the experience of having walked. He can even pick up his own bed and go home. Now, if Jesus can do that, then I know that he has the authority to forgive a man of his sins, of all his sins. Verse 12. Immediately he arose, took up the bed, and went out in the presence of them all, so that they were all amazed and glorified God, saying, we never saw anything like this. Okay, so they're all focused on the man who's healed and Jesus Christ. Now, I don't know about the owner of the house, but at some point he's going to be thinking, hey, I have a hole in my roof. Can somebody help me, please? I wonder if the onlookers helped. Did the onlookers? Or were they just there to gawk? Were they looky-loos? Number two, did the critical scribes? They're just there to tear down Jesus and his work and to tear down people and let them know that, you know, we're the ones who rule around here. Nothing happens unless we say it does. You think guys like that would help repair someone's roof? Did the people who only wanted to be blessed? You know, some people follow Jesus because they are in it because of what's there for them. Not because they want to learn to be like him to bless others. See, that's what Jesus is about. He didn't come down here to receive blessings. He came here to give blessings. And that's what he wants us to do. So yes, I have to receive blessings from him. But if that's all that I'm about, I'm not going to help someone fix his roof when I didn't tear it apart in the first place. Number four, to those amazed by the miracle. You know, we've had Brother Steve Lloyd speak here a couple times, and most of you know him, and I think most of you know that he's a magician. Man, Steve's a good magician. One of the best I've ever seen in what the kind he does, close-up work. I love to watch him every single time. Even some of the tricks that he's shown me before, and he even tells me how he does them. And he wants me to do tricks, too, and I just don't have the energy to do it, I guess. I don't know what my problem is. But anyways, he keeps him thought, here's how you do this, and so I'll watch. But I like watching him instead of doing it. I like being entertained. And I wonder if people were there watching miracles for the same reason. I would have loved to have seen a miracle. Would you not have? I'd like to go to a place where a magician is. But afterwards, when the entertainment's done, I want to go home. I don't want to fix their building for them. What about, could it be the same mentality for people who came to see miracles? Let's see someone walk who hasn't walked before. Let's see someone who has a missing leg suddenly have it again. Let's see someone walk on water. Let's see someone turn water into wine miraculously. That's what I want to see, but fix someone's roof? Don't ask me to do that. Number five, did the average person present who would not make room earlier? And these people weren't concerned about that paralyzed man. What are you doing trying to get in here? We want to hear Jesus. You think they're now going to be thinking, let's go fix the roof? Maybe so. Maybe they had a life-changing experience. That's possible. Number six, did the four men? You know, they may have. They may have thought, you know what? We broke it, we'll fix it. On the other hand, they could have been so thrilled that their friend could now walk on his own. They went home with him rejoicing and celebrating. And that would certainly be good. Well, finally, let me just submit this to you. The one who fixed the roof would be, number one, the one who followed Jesus because of who he is and not because of the works he would do for them. In other words, that it's the kind of person who follows Jesus for the message more than the miracles, who wants the life more than the loaves, who wants the truth more than the thrills. Secondly, it's the one who knows that the cross precedes the crown. I want the good stuff, yes, but I'm willing to suffer first, even as he did. Number three, the one who loved Jesus enough to think that no job was insignificant. I was really touched when I learned that Mia Hamm, a great woman soccer player, I guess the best in America at the time in the late 90s, was found cleaning the gear for her team. I mean, she's the star. Put her on the cover of Time magazine. And here she is cleaning the gear and packing it. And she explained that it's a team effort. And she didn't think that she was incapable of doing these things. Number four, one willing to do a little job, a job maybe without recognition, but who sees it simply as furthering the kingdom of Christ. Number five, one who is willing to do the unexciting and uninteresting, knowing that Jesus was one time rich and came down here to a place that, relatively speaking, must have been very unexciting and uninteresting. And finally, number six, one humble enough to wash feet. If we can stoop down to wash feet, we can reach up high to fix someone's roof. This is the spirit of a deacon. Now, wait a minute. This is the spirit of a Christian. A man who's to be a deacon doesn't just suddenly decide to be a servant. It's something he's already doing, and he just slips right into that position easily. Do you see what it takes to be a follower of Jesus Christ? Die to yourself and live for Him. Yes, we're installing deacons today, but you know what? If you've never been baptized before and you want to do that right now, we'll put off the deacon installation. No problem. We've got a baptistry behind me right now that's ready. If you want to become a New Testament Christian, come forward right now as we stand and sing.